What is this mindset that is stopping women from being outside? And you know, when I started the book, the pandemic had was not yet here, and I made all these plans to interview women about why they were outside. I didn't have a real specific plan, and then the pandemic hit, so I had to sit inside, and I did a lot of research on what fulfilling aging really was. And then I turned out when I went out finally and to do the interviews after the lockdown lifted, that I had a much better grasp of this journey.
I was just wondering when you were doing that research, or I guess when you came to then combine it with the stories of the women you met and you spoke to, was there something that was really, I mean, what was the sort of thing that struck you that you hadn't realized, or that, because I think there is a lot, obviously, the research around connections in the outdoors and how much it can bring to us in a general sense in terms of our well-being, in terms of our resilience. I mean, it is just, again, skyrocketed, I think, particularly as a result of the pandemic. And a lot more is known about it and is talked about. But I think there are still some aspects and things that struck me when I was reading the book that I was like, okay, so that's really interesting. And I was just wondering if there was a piece of research or a story that struck you, thought, actually, that I hadn't thought about it from that angle before.
Well, I was well aware that the messaging around our aging as women is toxic, and that we are being told very specific things, that we're going to be frail, we have to watch out for breaking bones, that we're on a cognitive decline, and that inevitably we should narrow our lives to protect ourselves. And the men weren't getting that message because they were out there with me in that, big swell or out there up in the air. And so I didn't, this book is has a lot of science that is backed up, but I felt like I did not need to do science on this. Like every time I mentioned like the toxic aging messaging, every woman like over 50 for sure, but 40, maybe even 30, they nod. Like, I don't do any science on that. That's proven. We all know it. So, but what really surprised me was the science I found around mindset and aging, which is basically that the way we look at our own aging predicts how well we age. So, if you have a negative view of your own aging, you have a higher chance of a cardiac event earlier and a cognitive decline earlier. And the opposite is true. If you feel like your aging is a time of exploration and exhilaration, you're happier, healthier, and you live 7 years, 7.5 years longer. That's huge. Oh, and they did a study that I ha that is not in the book, but in 2022 they did a study of 14,000 people, I think, over the age of 50, and found that those with a positive view of their own aging had a 43% less chance of no health issues in the next 4 years. None. 43. So obviously, this is all really important. You have to have a positive mindset. But then the obvious question was, how? How do you get a positive mindset in the face of such toxic messaging? And again, we all know what it is. It's so insidious, it's so subliminal, it's everywhere. I see it in my friends. They were very disheartened about their aging journey, and everything was blamed on age, my aches, my pains. I can't do that. I can't try that. And so the question was, how do you get it? And I had a feeling that the link was outdoor adventure. And in fact, it was.
When I read that in the book, I just thought that was so fascinating. Just because I think, one, there's that bit about how we tend to treat our bodies and our minds are so separate. You know, so much of the research looking into aging or diseases that occur as a result of aging, they're all very much body focused. They're medicalized, which, you know, it's obviously necessary when thinking about, you know, interventions and when you think about it from that perspective. But I think, you know, we know there is such a connection in the end between the way in which our brains operate, and the impact on our bodies. And that's not to say you can just think yourself out of ill health, but that fact that actually, like you said, that connection between what is going on for ourselves internally and externally, is something that I think we don't fully understand. And I just thought it was it was really interesting that there was research, one, to support that. And then when you tie that to the anecdotal, the stories that you hear about, you know, I think that's something that struck me reading the stories in your book, was the sort of, in a way, the agelessness of the people who are participating in the adventures that they were taking part in, that they were conscious of their age, but also why it was the sort of, why not? Why shouldn't I be able to do this at this point? Why shouldn't I be able to try it, rather than coming at it from age first? I am this age, and therefore I do something that is appropriate to that.
Right. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. It was clear to me that there's certain attributes that are sort of reserved for youth. And if you try to embrace them, like a little bit of recklessness, having fun, play, like all that is cordoned off for adults, I think, especially women, especially as we age. And so sort of reclaiming those feelings of fun and bravery is makes people kind of sit up and look at you, and you're basically, and this is where the power really came in going outside, is when you go outside, what nature asks of you upends all that messaging that not only other people are putting on you, but you believe yourself. So when you go outside, you can't really feel that frail, and you can't really feel that, you know, cognitively impaired, because you're always sort of dealing with the weather or the hill was steeper than you thought, or you forgot coffee, or you are learning something new. And all that flies in the face of this messaging. That's where I found the power of going outside was. It simply was a direct rebuke to what we're told about what we should expect. So when you upend your own expectations of yourself, there's a lot of power in that.
So powerful. I think one of the brilliant things as well of just as thinking that so much of our day-to-day lives is reflected back to us physically, in terms of you take photos or there's a mirror, or you're supposed to look a certain way or behave a certain way. And this whole point about how, you know, as you get older, you're supposed to sort of try and recapture your youth somehow, you know, whether it's, you know, trying to look like you still did 20 years ago, or that there's some sort of shame around that. And I think it's really interesting linked to that with being outdoors. I know when I'm out surfing or whatever, it's only if I come in and look in the mirror and I go, oh no, I do not look like I did in my head when I was on that wave. Somehow when I was out there, you know, you are caught in the moment and you're not thinking this is how I look, because like you said, you're caught up in the elements. You're trying not to get, you know, drowned by the wave, or you're trying to work out where the trail is and all of those sort of things. It's only when you retreat back into that sort of the indoors world that it suddenly becomes okay, I look like a complete sandy mess. I probably should do something about this. And your age start, you know, that those narratives around your age some can start to resurface as well. So I think
I will. Yeah, I do want to say that these women were not ageless in that they were actually embracing this stage in their life where they were still physically healthy in certain ways. I mean, I interviewed a wide variety of women of different fitnesses and physical situations, and they were, they had a sense of themselves and they just didn't care as much. I interviewed Vijaya Srivastava, who learned to swim at 68. And I asked her if being older was a hindrance to learning to swim. I mean, swimming is one of those psychological things that, you know, it triggers all those deep existential fears of drowning. And yet she went out and she did this because her doctor basically prescribed exercise for her. And she had never done anything outdoors before. And when I asked her how age influenced this new learning journey of hers, she said it actually helped, because she didn't care what she looked like in her bathing suit. She knew she wasn't going to be a great swimmer. And there was this urgency of, you know, she's not going to get a second chance to do this again. And I feel like it wasn't about trying not to be your age. It was just simply redefining what you could or could not do at that age.
I think there was a really interesting quote. I think it was quite near the beginning of the book where you said a woman growing old is the most boring movie ever, in terms of, you know, how that narrative is portrayed, how we're supposed to age or disappear gracefully in a certain way. And I think, you know, a lot of the stories felt like they were a sort of direct rebuke to that. Not that I'm trying to push myself into the world in terms of everyone look at me, but actually I'm going to, like you said, alongside the aging process, and in spite of it, continue to find a way to navigate that.
Not in spite, like because of, almost. Because, you know, what really, really, really surprised me is I was 57, 58 when I was writing this. And the women who were older than me that I asked, they all said the 60s was their favorite decade, which is eye-opening because that is not what we're told. You know, we're really told to look back at our gilded youth and you know, and mourn that. That's gone. But in fact, we're at this incredible stage now, as I was saying, not just emotionally and experientially, but also physiologically, because post-menopause, all those caregiving hormones that have been employed throughout our life or, you know, after puberty in taking care of other people, our children, our partners, and have changed. They've ebbed. They've changed. And it's not that we are not empathetic anymore, but just we're turning that empathy onto ourselves more. And we start asking, what about me? What about what? Let's care for me now. And I think that's great for the people around you. Like that's an amazing opportunity. And also almost because of this lack of identity that we are given, or this invisibility, this fading away that you're talking about, this is an opportunity too, because, you know, invisibility is a superpower to some degree. Like now you can redefine yourself. So it's really a pity that we have sort of subtly told women this is a terrible time of life, because it's actually kind of an amazing time of life. And over again, women told me that. Yes, for sure. At some point, the aging journey gets super difficult. But until then, let's take full advantage.
I mean, I guess it sort of leads me to my next question, really, which is around, you know, again, as you were hearing these stories, as you were carrying out the research, you know, what did you hear that, I mean, I think you've just alluded to it partly, but was there something that really kept you and inspired you and made you think, actually, I hadn't thought about either adventure or sort of aging and adventure together connected in this way before, and that somehow motivated or inspired me to try something or think about things differently?
Well, I had this sense that outdoor adventure was good for me because, again, I liked who I was in the outdoors and I didn't really want to give it up. But I couldn't really explain it to anybody. And once I sat down and really started deeply researching fulfilling aging, I got a sense of, first of all, what we need to keep in our life, which tends to fall away. Like everybody needs this, but it tends to fall away as we age. So we have to be vigilant to keep community in our life, to keep purpose in our life, to keep clearly health in our life and novelty in our life. And then finally, also this positive view on our own aging. So that those five pillars of healthy aging, you can actually get the moment you step outside. All that's the unique thing, I think, about going outside. There's this, you know, clearly the health aspect. I mean, yes, you can exercise in a gym, but going outside, they have shown on a biological level, is so much better for your overall biology and your emotional well-being. So the research really astounded me. I found that, you know, things like the tree chemicals are really important for your inflammation markers. Birdsong calms your brain, which is really important for memory and cognition. They've shown, and also, also just the quiet of outside, they've shown that people who take a walk outside test much better on cognitive memory tests when they come back in. And that's because the brain has been rested. It's not, doesn't have to filter out those hard urban noises. And that's a lot of work that we're doing constantly. So people, who have been outside have less anxiety and depression. So on this health level, on this holistic health level, going outside is important. So people say to me, well, I go to the gym. That's great. You should go to the gym. I love it. I go to the gym too. But you're not necessarily getting maybe the community, or you're not get, you often people get the community, but you're not necessarily getting the novelty. You're definitely not getting all those health benefits, those extra health benefit. People say, I joined a book club. That's amazing. You have to do that because that's great for community and for novelty, but you're not getting the health aspect. When you go outside and pick an activity, you are often hitting all those in a really powerful, powerful way.